A thing. It is attractive or repulsive. Its conventional reaction follows. Because it is not the stone from Grave Creek that is in Hebrew characters, either ancient or modern, it is a stone from Newark, Ohio, of which the story is told that a forger made this mistake of using modern instead of ancient Hebrew characters. We shall see that the inscription upon the Grave Creek stone is not in Hebrew. Or all things are presumed to be innocent, but are supposed to be guilty unless they assimilate. Col. Whittlesey, Western Reserve Historical Tracts, No. 33, says that the Grave Creek stone was considered a fraud by Wilson, Squires, and Davis. Then he comes to the Congress of Archaeologists at Nancy, France, 1875. It is hard for Col. Whittlesey to admit that, at this meeting, which sounds important, the stone was endorsed. He reminds us of Mr. Simons, and the man who considered that he saw something. Col. Whittlesey's somewhat tortuous expression is that the finder of the stone so imposed his views upon the Congress that it pronounced the stone genuine. Also, the stone was examined by Schoolcraft. He gave his opinion for genuineness. Or there's only one process, and seesaw is one of its aspects. Three or four fat experts on the side against us. We find four or five plump ones on our side. Or all that we call logic and reasoning ends up as sheer preponderance of avoirdupois. Then several philologists came out in favor of genuineness. Some of them translated the inscription. Of course, as we have said, it is our method or the method of orthodoxy way in which all conclusions are reached to have some awfully eminent, or preponderantly plump, authorities with us whenever we can. In this case, however, we feel just a little apprehensive in being caught in such excellently obese, but somewhat negativized, company. Translation by M. Jombard. Thy orders are laws, thou shinest in impetuous elan and rapid chamois. M. Maurice Schwab. The chief of emigration who reached these places, or this island, has fixed these characters forever. M. Oppert. The grave of one who was assassinated here. May God, to revenge him, strike his murderer, cutting off the hand of his existence. I like the first one best. I have such a vivid impression from it of someone polishing up brass or something, and in an awful hurry. Of course the third is more dramatic still. They're all very good. They are perturbations of one another, I suppose. In Tract 44, Col. Whittlesey returns to the subject. He gives the conclusion of Major de Helward, at the Congress of Luxembourg, 1877. If Professor Reed and myself are right in the conclusion that the figures are neither of the Runic, Phoenician, Canaanite, Hebrew, Libyan, Celtic, or any other alphabet language, its importance has been greatly overrated. Obvious to a child, obvious to any mentality not helplessly subjected to a system. That just therein lies the importance of this object. It is said that an ideal of science is to find out the new, but, unless a thing be of the old, it is unimportant. It is not worthwhile. Hovey. Then the inscribed axe, or wedge, which, according to Dr. John C. Evans, in a communication to the American Ethnological Society, was plowed up, near Pemberton, NJ, 1859. The characters upon this axe, or wedge, are strikingly similar to the characters on the Grave Creek stone. Also, with a little disregard here and a little more there, they look like tracks in the snow by someone who's been out celebrating, or like your handwriting, or mine, when we think there's a certain distinction in illegibility. Method of disregard, anything's anything. Dr. Abbott describes this object in the report of the Smithsonian Institution, I-875-260. He says he has no faith in it. All progress is from the outrageous to the commonplace. Or quasi-existence proceeds from rape to the crooning of lullabies. It's been interesting to me to go over various long-established periodicals and note controversies between attempting positivists and then intermediatistic issues. Bold, bad intruders of theories, ruffians with dishonorable intentions, the alarms of science, her attempts to preserve that which is dearer than life itself, submission than a fidelity like Mrs. Micawber's. So many of these ruffians, or wandering comedians that were hated, or scorned, pitted, embraced, conventionalized. There's not a notion in this book that has a more frightful, or ridiculous, mean than had the notion of human footprints in rocks, when that now respectabilized ruffian, or clown, was first heard from. It seems bewildering to one whose interests are not scientific that such rows should be raised over such trifles, but the feeling of a systematist towards such an intruder is just about what anyone's would be if a tramp from the street should come in, sit at one's dinner table, and say he belonged there. We know what hypnosis can do, let him insist with all his might that he does belong there, and one begins to suspect that he may be right, that he may have higher perceptions of what's right. The prohibitionists had this worked out very skillfully. So the row that was raised over the stone from Grave Creek, but time and cumulativeness, and the very factor we make so much of, or the power of mass data. There were other reports of inscribed stones, and then, half a century later, some mounds or caches, as we call them, were opened by the Rev. Mr. Gass, near the city of Davenport. American Antiquarian, I5-73. Several stone tablets were found. Upon one of them, the letters T F tones may easily be made out. In this instance we hear nothing of fraudulency, time, cumulativeness, the power of mass data. The attempt to assimilate this datum is that the tablet was probably of Mormon origin. Why? Because, at Mendon, Ill, was found a brass plate, upon which were similar characters. Why that? Because that was found near a house once occupied by a Mormon. In a real existence, a real meteorologist, suspecting that cinders had come from a fire engine, would have asked a fireman. Tablets of Davenport, there's not a record findable that it ever occurred to any antiquarian to ask a Mormon. Other tablets were found. Upon one of them are 2 Fs and 2 8s. Also a large tablet, 12 inches by 8 to 10 inches, with Roman numerals and Arabic. It is said that the figure 8 occurs 3 times, and the figure or letter O 7 times. With these familiar characters are others that resemble ancient alphabets, either Phoenician or Hebrew. It may be that the discovery of Australia, for instance, will turn out to be less important than the discovery and the meaning of these tablets. But where will you read of them in anything subsequently published? What antiquarian has ever since tried to understand them, and their presence, and indications of antiquity, in a land that we're told was inhabited only by unlettered savages? These things that are exhumed only to be buried in some other way. Another tablet was found, at Davenport, by Mr. Charles Harrison, president of the American Antiquarian Society. 8 and other hieroglyphics are upon this tablet. This time, also, fraud is not mentioned. My own notion is that it is very unsportsmanlike ever to mention fraud. Accept anything. Then explain it your way. Anything that assimilates with one explanation, must have assimilable relations, to some degree, with all other explanations, if all explanations are somewhere continuous. Mormons are lugged in again, but the attempt is faint and helpless because general circumstances make it difficult to explain the presence of these tablets. Altogether, our phantom resistance is mere attribution to the Mormons, without the slightest attempt to find base for the attribution. We think of messages that were showered upon this earth, and of messages that were cached in mounds upon this earth. The similarity to the Franklin situation is striking. Conceivably, centuries from now, objects dropped from relief expedition balloons may be found in the Arctic, and conceivably there are still undiscovered caches left by Franklin, in the hope that relief expeditions would find them. It would be as incongruous to attribute these things to the Eskimos as to attribute tablets and lettered stones to the Aborigines of America. Sometime I shall take up an expression that the queer-shaped mounds upon this earth were built by explorers from somewhere, unable to get back, designed to attract attention from some other world, and that a vast sword-shaped mound has been discovered upon the moon. Just now we think of lettered things and their two possible significances. A bizarre little lost soul, rescued from one of the morgues of the American Journal of Science. An account, sent by a correspondent, to Professor Silliman, of something that was found in a block of marble, taken November 1829, from a quarry, near Philadelphia, AMJ Sci. 1-19-361. The block was cut into slabs. By this process, it is said, was exposed an indentation in the stone, about 1.5 inches by 5/8 of an inch. A geometric indentation, in it were two definite-looking raised letters, like IU, only difference is that the corners of the U are not rounded, but are right angles. We are told that this block of stone came from a depth of 70 or 80 feet or that, if acceptable, this lettering was done long, long ago. To some persons, not sated with the commonness of the incredible that has to be accepted, it may seem grotesque to think that an indentation in sand could have tons of other sand piled upon it and hardening into stone, without being pressed out, but the famous Nicaraguan footprints were found in a quarry under 11 strata of solid rock. There was no discussion of this datum. We only take it out for an airing.